There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus. Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Manil, and I'm your host. On today's program, the Spectrum auction is done, but what is it and why is it important? I'll be talking with Craig Aaron from the media reform organization Free Press, who will tell us why we should care about the frequencies TV broadcasters will leave behind in 2009. But first, we'll check up with what's going on in our media environment with some Media Geek news. Do stay tuned. On March 24th, the Justice Department announced its approval of the merger of Sirius and XM Satellite Radio. Although not unexpected, the approval triggered criticism from consumer groups and members of Congress. The DOJ reached its decision after concluding that the merger would not seriously impact competition in either the satellite radio market or in the broader audio programming market. The DOJ noted that because satellite radio equipment is proprietary to the service a consumer selects and because each service has exclusive contracts for particular programming, like Oprah or Howard Stern, many consumers would not find one to be a suitable substitute for the other. Furthermore, the DOJ said that other audio services, especially the emergence of internet radio delivered over next-generation wireless networks, are likely to be attractive competitive alternatives to satellite radio. Consumers Union spokesman Bob Williams told ABCNews.com, quote, "We think that approval of the deal is plainly absurd. I would defy anyone to find a situation where consumers have benefited from monopolies in the past," end quote. CU and other public interest groups argue that a satellite radio monopoly will result in higher prices for consumers because there will be reduced competitive pressure to keep rates down. One of the loudest voices criticizing the satellite radio merger isn't a consumer group, but rather the industry group representing traditional radio, the National Association of Broadcasters. In sharply worded comments, NAB Executive VP Dennis Wharton said, quote, "We are astonished that the Justice Department would propose granting a monopoly to two companies that systematically broke FCC rules for more than a decade. To hinge approval of this monopoly on XM and Sirius's refusal to deliver on a promise of interoperable radios is nothing short of breathtaking," end quote. Some of the broken FCC rules Wharton was referring to include Sirius admitting to operating dozens of unlicensed transmitters to rebroadcast their satellite signal into weak reception areas, and also the hot-rodded mini-transmitters included in both XM and Sirius receivers that broadcasted an FM signal significantly more powerful than the FCC's Part 15 limits. Now it's up to the FCC to issue its ruling on the merger. When the satellite radio service was first created and approved by the commission back in 1997, it was done so with the explicit condition that the two different services could not merge. An unnamed source at the FCC told Reuters that Chairman Kevin Martin has yet to make a proposal either supporting or opposing the merger, but he has reportedly asked staffers to draft documents for several possible outcomes. The same source also told Reuters that Martin is likely to be influenced by the Justice Department decision, along with the DOJ's conclusion that terrestrial radio, MP3s, and internet radio all pose significant competition to satellite. On Capitol Hill, Senator Herb Cole, chairman of the Antitrust Subcommittee, told the FCC it should not allow XM Satellite Radio and Sirius Satellite Radio to merge, saying, quote, "We believe the elimination of competition between XM and Sirius is contrary to antitrust law and the interests of consumers," end quote. Cole went on to say that, quote, "We are particularly disturbed by this decision given the Justice Department's record in recent years of failing to oppose numerous mergers that reduce competition in key industries, resulting in the Justice Department not bringing a single contested merger case in nearly 4 years," end quote. Also in the House, Telecommunications and Internet Subcommittee Chairman Ed Markey of Massachusetts said, quote, "If the Federal Communications Commission, after completing its analysis and consideration of the proposed merger, decides to approve it, I urge the FCC to appropriately condition any such approval to ensure consumer welfare with respect to long-term service plans and pricing, as well as equipment compatibility and pricing," end quote. And in the Senate, Byron Dorgan from North Dakota called the Department of Justice decision to approve the merger, quote, "another disappointing example of this administration's blatant regard for the public interest with regard to media ownership," end quote. As I've mentioned before on Media Geek, the public interest group Public Knowledge has seen the approval of the satellite radio merger to be all but guaranteed, and therefore has been circulating a number of conditions it suggests the FCC enforce on the merger. In addition to suggesting that the FCC cap subscription prices and require programming to be made available in tiers and a la carte, Public Knowledge also has made one suggestion that should be of interest to fans of independent and non-commercial media. PK asked the commission to require the merged XM series to make 5% of its channel capacity available to non-commercial, educational, and informational programming over which it has no editorial control. This type of provision was built into the creation of direct broadcast satellite TV and resulted in progressive non-commercial broadcasters like Free Speech TV and Link TV having a nationwide distribution platform. Requiring non-commercial channels on satellite radio could open up an opportunity for a nationwide Pacifica radio channel or other broadcaster featuring progressive grassroots programming. Public Knowledge is also asking the FCC to require a new satellite radio monopoly to open up the technical specifications of its network and to allow device manufacturers to develop and consumers to use any device they choose without interference. Action by the FCC on the SiriusXM merger is expected to take place within the next month. According to a recent report by the Government Accountability Office, the FCC does absolutely nothing about nearly 4 out of 5 consumer complaints it receives and investigates. Furthermore, the FCC said it could not figure out why the Commission failed to take action or even issue a response on 83% of those complaints filed between 2003 and 2006. The biggest share of complaints came in regarding violations of the FCC's Do Not Call list for telemarketers. Also high in complaints are overbilling, bad cell phone service, and false advertising. Indecency complaints ranked 6 out of the top 10. Not surprisingly, the GAO recommends that the FCC update its complaint procedures, especially its complaint filing system. For its part, the Commission argues that it has already put in place some of the GAO's recommendations. And an article on the Ars Technica website, communications historian and scholar Matthew Lazar argues that the GAO's findings should cause concern for anyone worried about network neutrality. Lazar asks, quote, "If enforcement can't even explain at this point why it dropped a huge percentage of the complaints that it investigated, how will it manage the complexity of the peer-to-peer Comcast problem if the FCC establishes rules against Comcast blocking or slowing down protocols like BitTorrent," end quote. In another Ars Technica article, Lazar reported on a recent appearance by FCC Chairman Kevin Martin at Stanford Law School, where Martin nevertheless made some encouraging remarks regarding the Commission's ongoing investigation into Comcast blocking peer-to-peer internet traffic. Martin said that the Commission should scrutinize, quote, "arbitrary distinctions made about particular applications or companies as opposed to general practices that would apply on a more widespread basis," end quote. Furthermore, Martin criticized both Comcast's secrecy about its blocking and the manner in which it happened, telling the Stanford audience, quote, "I think that one of the most troubling aspects of the complaint in front of us is that at first the network operator denied that they were engaged in this kind of practice publicly. And indeed, the manner in which they were engaging in this practice had actually altered the return address effectively of the bits that they were inserting, the reset bits, so it looked like it was coming from someone else," end quote. And that's a bit of what's going on in our media environment. You're listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Reis-Mandel, and I'm your host. You can check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net, and of course, the radio program is at radio.MediaGeek.net. There you can listen in your browser, you can download an MP3 Og Vorbis, or you can subscribe to the podcast. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to me, paul@MediaGeek.net. Well, the SEC recently wrapped up a big multi-billion dollar auction of spectrum that's soon going to be empty when digital TV turns on and analog TV turns off. But sometimes it's hard to figure out exactly why this is important and why we should be concerned. So I turn to Craig Aaron, Communications Director for the media reform organization Free Press, to help fill in some of the blanks. Thanks, Craig, for joining me. Perhaps you could start by explaining to us a little bit about what the spectrum auction actually is. I think this is something which people don't typically hear about in their mainstream news, and so it sounds a little arcane and a little perhaps difficult to grasp. Maybe you could simplify things for us.
Certainly, I can certainly try, and thanks for having me on. The spectrum auction, we're talking about the public airwaves, and a chunk of the public airwaves are coming back to the government, being returned to the government by the broadcasters in 2009 as part of the digital television transition. So our television is going from analog to digital. It'll be sort of in some ways, is a massive giveaway to the broadcasters, but that's sort of a story for another time. The important part here is that an incredibly valuable chunk of the public airwaves that could be used for high-speed internet access is coming back to the government, and Congress decided to auction that off. So, that itself was a somewhat controversial decision. There's probably better ways we could allocate our spectrum. In fact, there certainly are. In fact, Congress really missed an opportunity. It was only the first of a series of missed opportunities where they could have done something like taken this a chunk of this valuable spectrum and made it unlicensed so it would operate like Wi-Fi does, only much faster speeds, allowing signals to travel through buildings. And so you sort of imagine these used to be television channels. So these airwaves are at the right end of the spectrum that make wireless communication very easy, uploads and downloads. Unfortunately, in their wisdom, Congress did not do that. And instead of creating an unlicensed space that might have encouraged lots of new entrepreneurship, they decided to auction it off to pay for tax cuts and the war and all these other things. And they realized they could make several billion dollars by conducting this auction. So that's what they did. And the auction has just been completed. And unfortunately, the results, again, are sort of another story of missed opportunities. And the winner of the auction, or the biggest chunk of the auction, the most valuable part of the spectrum, was Verizon, the phone company, Verizon Wireless. They won the exclusive license to this chunk of the public airwaves. And the bad news is for consumers that, of course, Verizon already dominates. You know, they're one of the companies that already controls our residential internet access. And now they're going to be the ones controlling this valuable chunk of spectrum that, if this auction had been conducted in a better way, might have gone to a new competitor. So it's really a missed opportunity where we could have seen the sort of mythical third pipe, an alternative to cable and phone companies who already control 99% of our internet access. This auction had the potential to create a new competitor, but it actually failed to do so. Now, the good news is, or there is some good news, there's a bit of a silver lining, and that is because of public pressure, this auction of the airwaves, there were conditions put on it. And as long as it brought in a certain amount of money, and it actually brought in far more money, they would have to respect some conditions in terms of open devices. So it would free you up to be able to, on this new spectrum, when it comes online and is offering wireless internet service or cell phone service, you would be able to use any device that you want, any application that you want, which is something you can't currently do on your cell phone. You can't just use any phone on any network. And that is a positive step forward. In fact, the results of this auction really bring into question all of the things the phone companies have been telling us for years about why they need to lock down certain networks and you can only use the phone that you bought from AT&T or Verizon. This certainly throws that into question about why we don't have open devices everywhere, but at least it's one small step forward. And the other small bit of good news is that despite all the warnings from the phone companies that in placing these consumer-friendly conditions that no one would bid on this spectrum, it actually brought in $20 billion, twice as much money as Congress had estimated was going to come in. So that's a little bit of good news. But unfortunately, the real lesson of this spectrum auction is that while an auction might be the most economically efficient way to allocate spectrum, it's not the most socially beneficial result. And that result would have been more competition, more choices, new alternatives for getting online. And there's very little incentive for a company like Verizon to do that because they don't want to compete with the existing internet access that they provide that we're already, you know, paying through the nose for.
So this bit of spectrum that Verizon won the right to use, I mean, what can they do with this? Can they offer internet? Do you think they will offer internet? Are we looking at some new type of cell phone? Do you have any sense of that?
You know, it's a little bit up in the air, and you know, that's one of the things is this is being auctioned off now. The spectrum will be returned to the government in 2009, but we're still years away from actually seeing a commercial application on this spectrum. So we're going to still be stuck with our limited choices for some time. I would expect that you're going to see some kind of combination. You know, the quality of this spectrum, the way it can penetrate buildings, and you know, the low number of fixed nodes you would need to use these signals, the potentials for sort of mobile broadband. I think that's what you're going to see is some are phones or sort of these next generation devices that would allow you to get on the internet and make phone calls. Unfortunately, you're going to be doing that within in a Verizon world and probably with a lot of Verizon products, although you potentially could bring your own devices in. So there's some opportunity for innovation here, but most likely, you know, all this technology is converging. And so I would be almost certain that we're talking about some kind of mobile broadband device that probably also allows you to make phone calls or to use this use this spectrum to connect and make phone calls. I think that's what you're talking about, because that's where everything's headed. You know, they want something that they can sort of have some sort of double or triple play with, and I think that's what you'll see on this public airwaves ahead, which could be very good. I mean, there's no question that, you know, faster mobile internet is something that we all want. You know, this was an opportunity to really establish this idea of sort of internet in your pocket. You know, you kind of hear about it with the iPhone, but this would sort of potentially be the iPhone on steroids if it's done right. And that's the real question is, how long is Verizon going to sit on this spectrum? You know, are they going to really put up new exciting products that compete with their other products? And, you know, how much are we going to have to pay for it?
So what you're saying is that there was actually a potential, should the FCC had made this policy decision, that some of that spectrum could have been left unlicensed so people could have used it like they use their Wi-Fi. And from your description of this particular set of frequencies, this would have been super Wi-Fi.
It would have been. And this is actually Congress's fault. Mm. Congress had the opportunity not to get greedy in this short-term view of, oh, we have to auction it off and make up $20 billion, because the economic potential, if we had opened these airwaves, would have gone far, far beyond that $20 billion. But back in 2005, this is before the fight over net neutrality, before a lot of people were really getting involved in some of these issues, you know, and you know, obviously with the bill for the war coming due, all of the tax cuts from the Bush administration, they decided to go with the short-term solution. And we're actually going to be paying for that for some time, because had you even taken a portion of this and made it unlicensed, you would have opened up all sorts of new devices and new opportunities. And, you know, this is the beachfront property, the Malibu of spectrum. You know, where we currently are with Wi-Fi, you know, those are really junk bands. They're cluttered with baby monitors and walkie-talkies and garage door openers, all competing on a very narrow slice of spectrum, which is why you need your Wi-Fi router to be so close to you. But if you were to use this spectrum unlicensed, you know, you would have spawned all sorts of innovation and all sorts of opportunity because of the great qualities of this spectrum that allow it to go through buildings and over mountains and all these other things that would have really given us a great chance at a more open, competitive internet, lots of new companies in there offering different products. That's the biggest missed opportunity here, but unfortunately it's one that, you know, we will not be able to go back on in the near term. So this is the hand we've been dealt by some short-sighted policy decisions, and so we're sort of left with a situation where, you know, it's not as bad as it could have been, but it's not as great as it could have been either.
Is there a way that, the average person can be engaged in this and perhaps talk back either to the FCC or talk back to their members of Congress to advocate for the technologies they'd like to see, not just the ones that are likely to be offered?
Absolutely. You know, there are two really good things that people can do. Number one, at the FCC, at the Federal Communications Commission, which is in charge of writing all these rules, there is a petition before the FCC. It's called the Skype petition, and it's by the phone company or the international calling company. And that would, what the Skype petition asks is it asks for these open devices, you know, allowing you to use whatever device you want on any network. It asks for that to be extended, not just to this new small slice of spectrum that we auctioned off a week ago, but to all of the wireless networks. This is a petition that would open up, you know, whether you've got Singular or Verizon or AT&T service, that you would be able to take your devices. You would have portability, so if you decide you want to switch, you don't have to get a new phone. It would allow you to use new kinds of applications. Like, so for example, why Skype is so interested is that theoretically you could take your mobile phone and make Skype calls on it, which might be a lot cheaper. So that's a really great petition, something people should really get behind at the FCC. When it comes to Congress, it's perhaps even more important. What we need to do is be talking to our members of Congress about the utter failure of the current administration and the current leadership in Congress to really pursue a national broadband policy that is going to bring the benefits of broadband to all Americans. We don't have one, and we are falling behind the rest of the world in terms of broadband speeds, prices, availability, because we failed to encourage competition. And, you know, this spectrum auction is just one example of that failure. What we really need to do is revisit policies so that we have these open access conditions where, you know, one company might control the wires or the pipes or have a license to a spectrum, but where other people can go in, pay wholesale rates, and offer competing services. That's what's going to bring these prices down. That's what's going to bring these opportunities. And, you know, the other thing they really need to do is establish network neutrality across all of these networks, so that whether you're going online via your cell phone or through your connection at home or some combination of the two, that when you log on, you can go wherever you want, do whatever you want, download whatever you want, as long as it's not illegal, as long as you're not harming the network, it's not up to the phone company what websites and services you can use. And we need to establish that across all of our communications networks. There's a good bill that would point us in that direction. It's called the Internet Freedom Preservation Act, House Bill 5353, that was just introduced by Congressman Ed Markey. So if you haven't yet called your representative and asked them to sign onto that bill, now is the time. You know, we really need to set the stage through the end of this Congress, and perhaps most importantly, into the next administration, whoever it is, that these kind of issues, this national broadband policy that we are lacking, that's a top priority of the new administration, because the rules are going to be made. The question is just whether the public has a seat at the table when they're written.
And indeed, phone calls really do count when you call your representatives. They really do use it as capital.
There's no question. I mean, they record every phone call they get. They track every letter they get. And especially, you know, you can go to savetheinternet.com or freepress.net, and we'll help you out. We have talking points and easy ways to contact your member. But if you add that personal touch, tell your story, explain why these issues matter, it can really have a big impact. The fact is that for years, all of our members of Congress have been told, you know, these issues are too complicated. They'll hurt your head. You know, don't think about it too hard. Just let us industry lobbyists keep rewriting the rules. And that's how we ended up with this broken system. So we have an opportunity, because for so long the public's been shut out, you know, even a few thousand, or, you know, even better, a few million people make contact, talk about how important these issues are. That can be enough to really push them into the light of day and get the policies that actually serve the public and not just the bottom line of AT&T and Comcast and Verizon.
And quickly, with regard to the FCC, since I think that often seems like a more arcane commission to deal with, is there a way that people can simply file their comments?
They can, and you know, we've again got things set up at savetheinternet.com. You can file directly with the FCC. We make it easy so you don't have to sort through the whole FCC website, and it's so important for them to hear from the public. You can also just write directly to the main FCC web address. You know, they're responsible for keeping track of all of this. And it's important, you know, even more than Congress, you know, the FCC is so used to being shielded and doing things behind closed doors. When a few thousand people weigh in, you know, with views and have smart things to say, they can completely shift the debate because it scares the FCC. They're afraid that the public's actually going to pay attention to what they're doing, and that scares them because usually what they're doing is another massive giveaway to big media companies. And, you know, we've seen it most recently with the investigation into Comcast for blocking BitTorrent and other peer-to-peer file sharing services. You know, 15,000 people contacted the FCC right away and got them to launch an investigation. Now, we have to keep the pressure on, make sure they actually see through these investigations, which sometimes have a way of getting sort of shoved in the bottom drawer. But the fact is that they will respond to that public pressure, and they're very, very sensitive to it. So getting involved and making yourself heard can have a huge positive impact on these media policies, and it's wide open. You know, the companies aren't ready for it. The FCC is afraid of it, and that's where all the opportunity is.
And so the real key to think about then, I think, for people to just break it down very simply is that spectrum equals the opportunity to communicate, possibly communicate in new ways, in new innovative ways, and more simple and possibly free ways. And that net neutrality as a policy, as something that should become law, will make sure that whatever you do in the spectrum on your devices will be unencumbered and you'll be truly free to communicate, have true free speech.
I think that's absolutely right. You know, that's what the internet's supposed to be all about. You know, it's such an unrivaled place for free speech, democratic participation, and economic innovation. And we can have all of those, but the rules that shape that internet do matter, and they're being made right now. And what the decisions made in the next few years are going to decide what the internet looks like for a generation, so there's no better time than now to get involved.
Okay, Craig, thank you so much for breaking this down for us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
That was Craig Aaron, Communications Director for the Media Reform Organization, Free Press. As an addendum to the spectrum auction issue, one of the things that Craig mentioned was the fact that Verizon will be required to allow open access to devices to operate on the spectrum it won. This requirement kicked in because the final selling price was over the $4.6 billion open access threshold established by the FCC. Although it did not win the auction, Google is being credited for pushing the auction price into the open access territory. Following up its auction action, the internet giant filed a proposal with the FCC arguing for remaining white space spectrum to be opened up for unlicensed use for broadband wireless applications. This white space spectrum refers to unused buffer frequencies adjacent to spectrum carved out for analog television broadcasts. These buffers were necessary because old TV tuners weren't as accurate as modern tuners are. Predictably, the National Association of Broadcasters is opposing any such use with their typical cry of interference. Additionally, some observers are watching Google's actions with some skepticism given the amount of power the company has gained on the internet. The FCC has not responded to Google's proposal. And of course, I'll be keeping an eye on what goes on with those white spaces of the public airwaves and whether or not they will be used for the public interest here on Media Geek. This brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with more news and views in our media environment. In the meantime, check out the Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. You can listen to and download the program at radio.mediageek.net, where you can also subscribe to the podcast. If you have any comments about the program, I'd love to read them. Send them to paul@mediageek.net. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and also is heard on 12 other community stations across North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, KWMD in Kosilov in Anchorage, Alaska, Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, CHMA in Sackville, New Brunswick, WBCR in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. The Media Geek Radio Show is available for free to any non-commercial community station. Just send email to paul@mediageek.net. Thanks for tuning in.